Welcome to the Packet Pushers. This is Greg Farrow. Today, a little bit of a quickie. I'm here at the Brocade Analyst and Field Day. Brocade announced their VDX 8770 switch, which is a big R switch. And if there's one thing that I love, it's big R chassis switches because they've got lots of whizzy fans. You know, they heat up the room quite nicely and they make packets go really, really fast in all sorts of directions. And so this is just a casual conversation about it because I thought it was a pretty interesting product release. There's some neat features in it that sort of highlight to me a different approach to the way we're going to go about seeing fabric networking and the way it looks in the future. So what I've done is I've buttonholed Sanjeev Homchowdhury and Premal Salvala. Sorry, apologies for that. And we have just ducked into a little room here, and they're the guys who are mostly responsible for being involved with the product development over the past, two plus years. And I thought we'd just talk backwards and forwards about what it was. So just to kick the conversation off, Premal, we were downstairs talking about it, and we were going over some of the speeds and feeds.
Correct.
So in the presentation this morning, we talked about 384,000 MAC addresses, right?
Correct.
So that was... That's pretty kick-ass because that's an awful lot more than anybody else. So there's bits and pieces of the competitors' products that sort of come in at, like, you know, 20,000, 40,000. This is, like, orders of magnitude larger. Mm-hmm. So what goes into that in terms of the engineering design there?
So just from an engineering perspective, we've taken everything and we've pushed it down to the single ASIC. And that is Typically, there is a TCAM that is there in hardware to manage any of the V4 and the MAC address tables and things like that. All of that is integrated into our ASIC at this point. So in terms of scalability, there are different pieces of the ASIC that need to scale. Mm-hmm. This is one piece of that particular ASIC that scales to that level.
Yeah. So that would mean for 384,000 addresses, there would have been a TCAM. That must be a big TCAM.
That's usually a huge TCAM, an external TCAM. But within the Brocade ASIC, we have combined that inside of the ASIC now. So again, when we talk about a little bit of our power numbers on the box, typically they heat up because as the TCAM sizes are, which are external to the ASICs, those become different components that draw a lot of power. Mm-hmm. Because we compress everything into the single ASIC, that's how we can scale up. At the same time, we can increase or reduce the latency of the platform, and at the same time, reduce the power consumption.
So having a single ASIC means you can have all the TCAMs, all the forwarding fabric in a single chip.
Correct.
And then you have, you know, the more and more you can put it down. So pretty much what Intel's doing with their CPUs.
Correct.
The more you can jam on a chip, the faster you can clock it, because it doesn't have to get outside of the chip and communicate with other chips.
Chips.
And then because it's all compressed down on a single die, you're burning less power to make that run.
That is correct.
So, but that's new. Putting TCAMs inside a combined chip is pretty new.
Correct.
This level of TCAM, you have chips out there in the market today, which would put us some size of table, the numbers that you just mentioned a while earlier. But what we are doing is pushing the limits here. 384,000 of table space there, and that's only the MAC table. We have 384,000 IP table as well. So lots of table compressed there.
Yeah.
That's really pushing the boundary here.
Okay, so 340, so that's, you can do MAC and IP.
We have separate MAC and then separate IP, all those crammed inside.
So that means that if you're building a data center fabric that's all layer 2, you want one big fat layer 2 space, then you're good for 384,000 addresses, which in a virtual network is actually today. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in VMware environments, they're talking something like 50-to-1 compression ratios on servers. Mm-hmm. And if you've got 1,000 virtual servers, then you've got 50,000 machines.
There we go.
If you've got 5,000, then you've got 250,000 servers, virtual servers. That's MAC addresses.
Correct.
So it's a big issue.
It's not something which is way out in the future. We talked about 50:1 ratio, but I do have customers who are pushing 100:1. Mm. And as soon as you go there, you very quickly start consuming this MAC table that we are providing.
Yes.
And what we wanted to build here is the scalability to a customer who starts small today, but as he grows, he doesn't have to rip and replace the product. The product is ready to take him to that level of scale.
Yeah. And then also because of the layer 3, if you're going to do layer 3 to the edge and then run overlays, we're still golden.
We can do that.
We can do that too.
Yeah.
So that's important. So whichever way you decide to build your architecture, whether it's VMware with layer 2 everywhere,
right,
and cross your fingers and hope that nothing blows up in the layer 2 space, mm-hmm. or if you decide to move to a layer 3, you're still covered for 384,000.
Absolutely.
End nodes.
When we started, we set out, it's a no-religion philosophy.
Yep.
So if somebody wants layer 2, sure, we can do that. We can do that very well.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody wants to do layer 3, yes, we can do that as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So the existing products that we have, the previous VDX fixed form factors,
yeah.
Even they had layer 3 capabilities. It's just that the software, we didn't enable that.
Mm-hmm.
Now when we are enabling software in NOS 3.0, which is the new software coming out,
mm-hmm.
well, layer 3 gets enabled even in the existing products that we had built.
Yeah, so you're actually, the way I see your product releases kind of going is that you're building this linear development. So you release the VDX 6000 series.
6000,
there's,
yeah.
there's a bunch of models mm-hmm. inside of there, mm-hmm. and they're sort of top of rackish.
Correct.
Sort of, you know, for a lot of people, they would actually be core because they're still pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've got the 8500, which is the leaf spine
mm-hmm.
architecture at the back.
Correct.
Okay. So we talked about size. We were talking downstairs. It's got 8 power slots.
It's 8 power slots.
8 power slots, which is a lot.
Correct.
Right? There's no way you look at it. You don't normally have 8.
That is true.
And they're each 3 kilowatts, and you need 3x3
correct.
To get started.
To get started, yeah. So what when we started designing the system, we wanted to so typically chassis, once they enter the data center, they were designed in the past life for about 5 years maximum.
Mm.
So every 5 years, they would go and revamp the architectures again, right? When we started building the chassis, what we wanted to do was, hey, we want to build it for the next 10 years. We don't want to go and rip and replace the entire fabric or entire infrastructure because, hey, it went from 1 gig to 10 gig to 40 gig to 100 gig,
mm.
right? At the same time, we wanted to keep it wire speed.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So when we started building it, the first thing we did is removed all the power connectors in the back and we put a bus bar.
Yeah.
Okay. And by doing that, what we've done is we future-proofed the platform. So today we are doing about 14.5 watts of power draw on the system per 10 gigawatt
mm-hmm.
When it's running full wire speed. And that comes out to about 6,000 watts of requirements. But just to be safe from a customer perspective, we deploy it by default with three power supplies today.
Yeah.
And just for safety, we say 3+1. You can go 3+N+N, whatever your requirement is for your data center environment from that perspective.
So for the people who are listening and wondering why 9 kilowatts of power sounds like a lot, the point to remember is that this is a 10 gig switch, and it's designed, the shipping is 48 10 gig ports in a blade.
That is correct.
And if you figure that it's standing draw on a 10 gig SFP is 6.6 watts per port, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So 6 by 48 is 250... Mm-hmm.
300, yeah, almost 300 watts per 10... for yeah. the whole blade is what...
Just for one blade.
Just for one blade.
So if you've got 8 blades, you're suddenly drawing significant amount. And if you're drawing 40 gigs, I think the current draw for a 40 gig line card is
it's very similar. It's not very off from that same number.
Right.
Very similar in the architecture itself. So we don't see much movement in terms of the numbers.
Okay, so 40 gigs draws the same power.
4 times the number you'll see on the 10 gigs.
So it's 4 times what 10 gig draws. So if a 10 gigs drawing 10 watts at full at line rate,
it's drawing 40 watts.
It's drawing 40 watts because it's actually 4 10 gig lanes.
Exactly.
Because a 40 gig is actually 4 by 10 gigs mucked together in the PHY. Right. So 100 gig, of course, is...
Yeah, so we are planning on 100 gig. It's roadmap for next year.
Yep.
And when we build the chassis, again, the idea was that when we came up with blades with denser, let's say if we decide technology changes and there will be SFPs or mini SFPs and we decide customers want something like that, then we have the capability to deliver that kind of power to the line card modules mm-hmm. themselves. So the idea is there in place. Now it comes as what if... If technology allows us,
so you don't need all eight.
You don't.
The idea
need
is that you might suddenly say, "Oh, yeah. we've got." Well, yeah. I mean, the other factor here is that every slot is 4 terabits per second.
Every slot is designed with 4 terabits in mind.
Yep. Eventually,
you can scale up to that number,
yeah.
and it's a Ferrari in that chassis, right?
Yeah.
What you can swap out in a chassis are the line cards. Line cards have a limited line. But the chassis itself is expected to last 7 to 10 years.
Yeah.
So what was very important for us is the back plane of the chassis because that's the one element that stays throughout the 5 to 7 years or 7 to 10 years. And that back plane we have built with so much of capacity that it gives 4 terabits to each slot. And actually it can go even more than that, but at this point we don't want to overhang ourselves.
Yeah.
And so 4 terabits.
Don't want to promise too much and then have somebody
exactly.
else saying, oh, we've got to do that.
Right.
But you're actually expecting to get larger over time. Now, just to put that in perspective, and this is what I was telling myself, 4 terabits per second, what does that really mean? That's 40 by 100 gig ports in a card, non-blocking.
Correct.
So that should take you, you know, it should take me a fair way into the future anyway. I can't see how much we're going to get out of that. So, but the thing is that 8 power slots don't get bent out of shape because you're not actually using them all. You're not expecting to load up 8 by 3 kilowatts to draw the passage out. You're just saying whatever it is in the future, you got it. You had the. I can almost imagine, oh, we've got the space, so what the hell? Well, not quite, but you know what I'm saying.
So the 400 gig standards just started, right? So people are already thinking about 400 gig modules, and that if we look at it, that could be anywhere from 5 years from now or something like that when it would actually come into reality. So if we are already planning that comes into the horizon of the chassis itself. We do not know what the power requirements would be at that point, but we feel that we have the capability to deliver it on this platform if it's required.
So, six slots for fabric. So 5 plus 1. And it's a standard fat tree cloth architecture?
Yes. I wouldn't say it's a little bit different from a traditional switch architecture. We don't have a central arbiter on the switch anymore. All that intelligence is all the way in the line card now.
So fully distributed?
It's fully distributed. That would be under NDA if you want to discuss that.
But, I mean, that's important because some of the competitors are doing distributed everything, saying that it's distributed feature cards, distributed forwarding.
So we pushed out the central arbiter.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just saying, you know, I'm measuring that against what I know about competitive architectures.
Correct.
And they don't have a problem talking about it. So that was
very, very distributed. Yeah. One of the things we haven't talked about in our previous calls or even the session today, and since you take us here, is where we are going with this distributed model is we have put multi-core CPUs in each line card. That hasn't been talked in the past. Well, the reason we are doing that is going down this distributed computing model that each line card should have the capability of doing a lot of analysis, statistics, monitoring, diagnostics, processing, control plane, SDN, you name it.
Open flow controller on the second seat.
Very possible.
Okay, so we're talking something like... So I was chatting to John Hudson about this, and he was saying there's two CPUs on the line card that could exist in separate operating spaces. We could either have one CPU dedicated to OS and the other CPU to something else.
Yeah.
It might be a second copy of the operating system, and you could actually switch between them.
Two images running there. Mm-hmm. We actually have more than two cores, multiple cores in that CPU.
Okay.
Where you can have two images running, and they run in heartbeat sync. If one goes down, the other can pick up. As opposed to a traditional switch out there, where if there's anything wrong in the line card code, well, that line card crashes.
Yep.
Here we have put a lot of redundancy by leveraging this multi-core CPU in each line card.
Right, so you've still got spare cores. Must be like a 3 or a 4 core or something like that. So now you can have, you've got a spare core where there's an operating system space for you to put something.
Yep.
And that's yet to be defined.
Yes.
But, you know, if you're looking for something to come into the future...
So we started off with some of the distribution of, so S-Flow is a big example, right? Traditional environments, everything goes to the management module, gets processed and thrown out. Yeah. That is a lot of time consumption, right? I mean, a lot of CPU consumption for any of the S-Flow. If we move it down to the line card modules, let them handle all that, and we just do the transport, it makes it much easier, much more efficient.
Yeah. So you're distributing that.
Some of the S-Flow.
And every time you put a card in, you get that much more.
We got every module is by itself. Every module is handled by itself.
I like that because you get a nice linear progression.
You get, exactly.
See, one of the problems you have with supervisor-heavy architectures is you buy the supervisor, and you're actually, when you buy the first chassis, you actually got a big CapEx. Because all the processing's in the supervisor. Now, I'm allowed to say, in the CAT 6500, for example, all the switching fabric and all the processing on that supervisor is there. So if you buy just one supervisor module and one line card, you've got a big capital up front. And then every line card is cheap after that. So you have what I call a blocky purchase model, big CapEx to buy the chassis and the first supervisor or the first pair of supervisors, and then very little steps to fill out the chassis. But this type of model means every line card is full of brings its own CPU, its own processing power, its own forwarding capability. So you buy the chassis, and it's almost like the chassis. I mean, you buy the metalwork, you buy the power supplies, you buy the management engines. So sure, it costs money, but it doesn't cost millions to buy all of the fancy silicon, and then you're only using it. And then each line card then nicely steps up the price till you get to the full chassis. And then you start upgrading the cards again.
Well, your analogy is quite right, where you did this step function, this big step function in the beginning, and then smaller functions. What I'd like to point out is the way we have priced the system is, in our model, even the smaller line cards that you buy, their price is going to be way more competitive than any of the other guys out there.
Yeah,
although it has a lot of this CPUs and multi-cores in there, still the price per 10 gigi port is going to be leading the industry.
Well, people can find that out. I mean, if they're interested, they can get a hold of their reseller or you. And I'm not into grubby money. I'm more interested in the nerd stuff. Mm-hmm. So we talked about supervisor card, fancy features in there, anything exciting? Or is it just, you know, an Intel motherboard?
So it's not an Intel motherboard.
Okay.
We did not use x86-based processors on it.
What might be very interesting for you is in the line card, we actually have a thin hypervisor running there. We have a hypervisor, and on top of that, we have two instances of this operating system.
Yes.
So, yes, it is running Linux, but we also have embedded hypervisor technology there to give more fault tolerance. One goes down, another one is up.
Yep, so there's two of those. Yeah, yeah. John was actually saying that you can actually have two. You could have an upgraded image sitting in one instance, run that before you commit, and then mirror it back. So you can run the new image, and if there's any problems, you can instantly revert back to the previous version.
That is the idea.
So the other interesting thing of the release was the multi-gateway layer 3 forwarding feature.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that there's three things that Brocade does, because I got a briefing from you guys last week, and I covered some of this in an article I wrote on network computing, if you want to go and listen to me wail on about that sort of stuff. Brocade has a layer 1 trunking capability, which is a it's sort of like... it actually, if two Brocade ASICs see that they are directly adjacent to each other, so if the ASIC and the line card on the between the two switches are connected on the same ASIC on the blade, they'll actually say, hey, I'm going to invoke a special Brocade trunking mode.
Correct.
And bond at L1 of the PHY. And so 2 1 gig ports becomes 1 2 gig port.
Correct.
And it's completely invisible to the operating system and to the Ethernet, and it actually does frame spraying. So it actually unequally load balances according to whatever's needed to make it actually look like a 2 gig or a 20 gig or, a, you know, whatever it is.
Correct.
The only limitation here is it's a hardware limitation, is it must be ASIC to ASIC, because the ASIC that sends the packets and receives it must be able to reorder them, because you must put a proprietary header on them to make this work. I mean, that's just the way it has to be. So, and that feature's not well known. You've just got to know a little bit about the insides of your switch to know where the ASICs are and which port feeds into an ASIC. But on the 8770, it's just one ASIC for the entire line card?
No. There's 6 ASICs for all the 48 ports that are sitting in front. And we do this Brocade trunking between the fixed and the modular systems, as long as it's the same ASIC on both ends.
Yeah.
You put it very well, is we bond the two links together. And so what it happens is we need this ASICs on both ends, again, is to make sure that you are... the flow is always in order. That is, we don't change the order of the packets in the flow. The other thing of importance is that it is, again, going towards our bigger Ethernet fabric story, is increasing the efficiency of the network. Standard LACP with hash load balancing is not as efficient as what we can do with Brocade trunking. Yeah, we have the option of both. But we automatically default to trunking between our switches.
Yeah. Just so you still, so you can still have LACP if you ever need to break out into. So if you decided to mix into a, you know, somebody other vendor's network, you get LACP. You can have your 2x1 gigs bonded into a channel using LACP and all that happy goodness. But this Brocade trunking acts at a much lower layer, and because of the proprietary signaling that you can have, it actually is much more efficient.
Correct.
It doesn't use a XOR function that might unequally load balance in weird ways.
Yes.
Yeah, that's and that's a neat feature. There's a couple of other vendors that are doing that, smaller vendors, but it's I had explained to me, and it's quite a neat function. So then there's layer 2.
That's correct.
Which is, you can either go down the LACP path or you can go down the Trill path. So that's VCS.
Mm-hmm.
So our VCS is Brocade's L2 ECMP function, which uses Trill. And at some point in the future, become fully Trill compliant when it.
So our data path is completely Trill compliant, right? Mm-hmm. It's only the control path, we don't do ISIs today, but otherwise the data path is fully based on the Trill header, and we haven't changed any of it from what was originally the standard on it.
Yeah, and it makes sense because although I'm unhappy about the fact that it's not Trill standard. It was explained to me that you use FSPF, and the reason for that is that your SSPF gives you functions that aren't in the ISI signaling layer at this time.
Exactly.
Right, and that's why you get up.
Also, historically, when we started this project, which is 3+ years back, starting with the fixed product, the standards were still happening. And we couldn't wait for the standards to happen. We took the hardware data plane, like Primo mentioned, but on the software, we already had a very functional 15 years of experience building Fabric, so we took FSPF. In the future, if you wanted to shift that and put in ISIS, that's a very easy thing for us to do.
Sure. So then you can get your Trill integration with a, with a vendor. So if you had to go for a multi-platform, you could rest assured that it's there.
Yeah.
But FSPF, the reason that Brocade, correct me if I'm wrong, the reason that Brocade sticks with FSPF is because of the advanced features you've got in there today for the Fabric functionality.
All the Fabric functionality is all tied with the FSPF today.
And there's features in there that aren't in the current Trill.
Absolutely.
They may be coming. But
so Trill, again, just pure data path. FSPF, I'll say, is the signaling between the switches. And just for clarification, that is what is where our VCS technology is today. Because we are sharing so much information between these nodes, we needed to utilize FSPF, which has all our secret sauce.
If you want to hear more about VCS, there's a really good white paper on the Brocade website, which you should tune into, and it explains a lot of the details about what makes VCS functional, like what's different about VCS, say, than from Cisco's Fabric Path. We also had a presentation from Brocade at Tech Field Day 3. So there'll be a presentation on the Vimeo website for the Tech Field Day account where you can tune into some briefing data there about the VDX platform. And you can see a live presentation from, I think it was John Hudson off from memory, but, you know, go and tune into that.
As we started talking to customers and building on Fabrics, what we realized is that as they scale up, the gateway becomes the bottleneck. And when I say the gateway becomes the bottleneck is every host going up to the gateway means it, I can get only two active gateways in some cases. And with Cisco GLBP, I can get up to four active gateways. But again, the model is very different. With the layer three multipathing capability that we brought in, we are allowing it to scale to four in this release. And we will go higher as we go forward. So it does not limit it. And we share a single MAC address, a virtual MAC address across those four. And at the same time, so that's much more easier and efficient than what GLBP is or any of the other competitors' models in terms of layer three gateways.
Juniper might have something to say about that, but we'll just get right past that. So what we're saying here, now I was looking into this because Ivan Pepelniak made a great blog post today about VCS, highlighting the goods and his version of the good and bads, which is different to mine, which is perfectly fine because Ivan's much smarter than I am. And he talked about, how obviously we would use this in a leaf spine. And what he said is you would use those four layer three in the spine of the leaf spine architecture, right? So what you would have is four switches. If you can sort of imagine, I'm furiously scribbling on the virtual whiteboard here. Sorry, you'll just have watched me waving my hands around. There's four switches that sit in the core layer, and then below that you would have up to 20 switches in the leaf that is facing down towards the server stacks.
Correct.
And those four routers in the core would be hyper-connected or multi interfaces down to those 20, four connections down to each of those 20 switches.
Mm-hmm.
Got that? Listening? Yep, good. And those four in the spine are actually going to do the layer 3 forwarding. And any one of those four can actually route the layer 3 packets from any of the 20. So when it comes to a server routing between two VLANs, there's actually four VDX 8770s doing the layer 3 routing. And they share the load between them more or less evenly.
That's correct.
Yep. The gateway functionality is logically one, but there are four instances of VDX 8770 which can be doing the load sharing.
Okay, now what I also found interesting is you said that you expect to fix that, go higher in the future.
That is correct.
You're just waiting for that to mature.
So if we take this analogy to the next, this example to the next level, today we talked about four gateways being the exit point of the fabric.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what Primo was mentioning is we can extend that in the future. We can extend it and make every node of the fabric a layer three gateway. Why would you need that, or where would you need that?
If you're using a layer three to the host. Every host in your network is layer 3 and slash 32 subnet,
right.
So you're actually routing across your backbone, you completely avoid layer 2.
So that's one option if you want to go completely layer 3. However, some of our customers, what we are seeing, they do not want to go complete layer 3 or complete layer 2.
That you never.
Because they have few racks which has a lot of inter-VLAN traffic.
Mm-hmm.
on those particular racks, they would want to tick and enable Layer 3 gateway service. Mm-hmm. So with this model, you can enable Layer 3 gateway service. You can pick and select which racks you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have the exit gateways, which anyway does it, four of them.
So you still have the spine.
Yes.
The four gateways at the spine, and then you might start doing Layer 3 routing across the edge at various points. But you can still have multiple gateways in each zone.
Correct.
Okay, so that would scale out. So it should be pointed out that your current fabric architecture scales to 8,000 ports. So you claim that. So that is, and the documentation talks about 24 chassis. So that's four in the spine and 20 across the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 20 chassis delivering 48 ports a slot by eight. Do the maths and you end up with the numbers that you're talking about.
Yeah, we've got the math, and based on how you want to configure, depending on what kind of topology you want, if you put 24 chassis in this fabric, you can have 8,000 server-facing ports, usable ports.
Just on 24 switches?
24 chassis switches, yes.
Yep. And the switches aren't very big, by the way. They're not...
About 15U.
15U.
Yeah.
So they aren't taking up a lot of space.
They aren't taking up a lot of space.
Yeah, which is quite neat.
You know, some of our customers have asked initially, I have got two gateways. Today I'm used to that. Why would I need a third or even a fourth? And to that, I'll do a small digress and ask you, Greg, when you came in from UK, which airport did you fly in here?
SFO.
SFO. When you are leaving from here, if SFO is congested,
we do
have an option of using San Jose Airport. You know that. That flies straight to UK.
Yeah.
And we also have Oakland Airport, which also does that. So as the Bay Area was increasing in size, we moved from one airport now to three major airports. Data centers are seeing that same thing. Layer 2 is expanding, and you are starting to see Layer 3 gateways becoming a choke point.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the choke point that we are relieving with this technology.
So the old days of having, you know, HSRP, which is where we used to have an active and a standby gateway, and then the active one would go hot. Then we started slugging the active standby so that, you know, every other VLAN was load balanced, and then sharing the load between them.
Then you had to go and distribute your VLANs. You had all
very manual, very easy to make a mistake.
Odd even, things like that.
Yeah. So we had all those odd even, you know, and then so you had to have the span tree matching the HSRP.
Correct.
And we don't want any of that anymore. We just want to spend all that time designing stuff and buying new stuff instead of worrying about...
Yeah, have nice, sexy things looking at.
Yeah, I want to have arguments about, you know, ACMP algorithms instead of dicking around with spanning tree left and right and, you know, spending 2 weeks of my life auditing every VLAN and making sure the ports are all left, right, balanced and looking at output graphs.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
That never happened to me.
Think of it, we got rid of spanning tree, which was great.
Yep.
So no more BPDU storms in my network. That's awesome. I don't have to go debug those anymore.
Yep, that's right. Server connects directly to a switch, which is trill connected.
Sure.
So you just have spanning tree on the edge to protect, so if some idiot decides to put a loop in the VMware stack or the cable.
I wish it was that trill was invented before spanning tree. Right?
Yeah,
we wouldn't have to think about this.
Yeah, well, that's what Radia said she invented it for, was to get away from that. Okay, so we talked about Layer 3. What else have we got?
Did we talk about latency?
Nope, we haven't done latency. Any others?
The industry's best latency number, 3.5 microseconds, any port to any port in the switch. It doesn't have to be in a line card. It can be across line cards. And that, again, goes back to the first point we talked about, is in our ASIC, we have put differentiators. We have put so much in the ASIC that we don't have to go into multiple ASICs to get packet processing done. It's done in one.
If we pop out that line card, I bet we're going to see like one chip in the middle of it. That's
not that simple yet.
That would be easy. Yeah. To get to the densities, that one ASIC is not yet here. But it is theoretically possible, right? It's just have to bring it a single ASIC.
It would take a while to get there.
Yeah, so the minute we start talking about chassis, we also need to talk about is the traffic managers, right?
Yeah.
That's important. Again, it's handling so much traffic as it goes through the system, and it has to be efficient. And given that this is a box that is designed with convergence, when I say that, I mean storage, which is usually large chunks of data, and IP traffic, which is small chunks of data, and being able to load balance those, or rather being able to guarantee those. So this chassis is by default DCB enabled for all ports. So we do not go and tell the customer, hey, for DCB, you've got to pay more.
Okay.
So by default, every port in the system in the VDX family.
I'm in love. I don't have to pay licenses for DCB.
Oh. Yeah. So you get DCB by default on all ports on the VDX platforms. The other thing is with latency, I would also add is we do 3.5 microseconds from any port to any port, whether it's L2 or L3.
Okay.
So we have changed the model in which how the ASIC does the lookup. We do parallel lookups now for layer 2 and layer 3 packets, mm-hmm. and that is something which is unique on this platform,
cool.
which is not there before. A lot of it is pipeline-based. Traditional architectures for layer 2, layer 3 is always being pipeline-based. So I would do L2, then I would do L3, then I would look at ACL, even if I did not have those feature requirements, you would go and turn it off, and that's how you get better performance, right? But if you turn on L3, that means I did a L2 and a L3, my latency just went up.
Yeah.
So our competitors have double our latency because the minute you turn on some of the other features, their latency numbers jump up.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, so when you say traffic management, what you actually mean, or what I think of, is QoS.
Correct.
You're actually saying that you've got quite advanced QoS capabilities in the box.
So with we are a virtual output queue based architecture. Mm-hmm. So every queue has every egress port has an ingress queuing.
Mm-hmm.
We have 8 for unicast and 4 for multicast.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it has kind of become common for most traffic managers to have that capability. But this is very similar to our MLXE platform, where we are running it as a core of our service providers. Very similar in that sense on this platform.
So okay, let me ask you a question then. So the VDX is clearly targeted at big Ethernet, but Ethernet is everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I see it as being a few things. One is the data center. So you want a big data center, and you can start off with just, unlike some architectures, you can start off with just a couple and then keep bolting them together with the VCS and the fabric will scale out. And one of the interesting things about VCS is it's a hitless addition.
Correct.
So when you actually add another one, you don't have to take a change risk to bring it into place.
It's, mm-hmm.
I was actually thinking this morning when I was sitting through the briefing, I was going, oh, I remember doing that with FDDI. I used to work in hospital backbones, and I used to just walk up, and we'd just crack the FDDI ring, snap in another switch, wait for it to stabilize, then crack it again and plug another switch in, and just keep going across with the FDDI. We never bothered with change outages because it was FDDI. It was... You could break the ring, it would wrap, away we'd go.
Correct. And but you had to wait for it to stabilize. In this case, you don't have to wait.
Well,
you bring in another switch and stick it in right there.
Well, we only did that because we wanted to check that the ring had come back together.
I know.
In those days, things weren't necessarily guaranteed.
Fast enough. I know what you're talking about.
Things weren't quite
they
so guaranteed.
Fast. Yeah. Exactly.
There was FDDI, not best protocol ever. You could bring it back today and I'd be
no,
all
there's
over.
One more. ATM.
That's very funny. That's what I liked about it. So for data centers, it's good. You can start off with a corner, a pair of, and then just keep building it out as you built your virtualization stack or, you know, whatever it is you want to use it for, layer 3 OpenStack, whatever it is, right?
Yep.
But the service provider is going to be big on this, especially if you're an internet exchange point because you're talking about 10 gig, 40 gig.
Mm-hmm.
You can have your layer 2, you can have your layer 3 at wire speed, do a BGP root reflector off wherever you want, but here's your fabric that's going to hyperconnect all those ports that are coming in. You've got all the traffic management and your S-flow, so you can extract all the data. So internet exchange points can feel like they've got a growth path.
Absolutely.
Quite a few internet exchange points are talking to us. In fact, one of them is even doing a beta on this.
Mm-hmm.
And what they like about this technology is internet exchanges, they are predominantly L2-based.
Mm.
And their peers who use them, they have L3 points. So within the internet exchange, which is predominantly L2, if they have given a chassis with 10 ports to one ISP, and then as other ISPs have come onto the chassis, let's say they have filled up that chassis.
Mm.
Well, the first ISP comes back in a couple of months and says, we need a few more.
Mm.
What they do today is they give another few ports on an adjacent chassis. Well, the problem in today's world with legacy technology is when the same ISP wants to talk to itself, they are part of two chassis,
they have to go through
STP route and come back, multiple hop, not good.
No.
What they want is really a multipathing capability, and that's what we are providing with VCS Fabric.
Yeah.
So the internet exchanges are very interested in this technology that we are building.
Yeah. And like I said, you can snap it in and just start, right. And then you know you don't have to worry about the fact that VCS doesn't pop all the time.
Yeah.
I've configured VCS a couple of times in labs, and it's...
It increases the utilization of their network way more than they can do today.
Yeah, and you're also talking about 10, 40, and 100 gig.
Correct.
So in the current version.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's on the line. Okay. I think we're done. Primoz Slavla and Sanjeev Homjowdery, thank you for joining me on the Packet Pushers. As always, you can find the Packet Pushers on the web at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on the Twitter as @PacketPushers. And, of course, I'm Greg Farrow. You can find me and my blog on etherealmind.com, or I am on the Twitters as @etherealmind. I hope you appreciate it. I just want to say that this is a sponsored event, that is that Brocade have paid to bring me here, for anybody who's listening. And they have paid for my accommodation and for my travel, but I do not receive any other benefit. My opinions remain my own. On the whole, I'll tell you what my opinion is. I'm quite impressed by this switch. It shows me that there are significant differences between the way the Cisco Nexus 7000 attacks things, and you can see the way that Juniper's taken their product, and it's a different attack, and the VDX has come at it from a completely different perspective. And if you take some time to look at the three different approaches, there's a lot that you could learn from how these companies have actually tried to deliver a different solution without actually sort of... I don't actually see them sort of as directly competing. They're not all doing the same thing. They're doing something different in different ways to come up with a slightly different answer, and it might be worth having a look. So as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.